Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, Justin Cuthbert, J.D. Bunkus. Hoping to get Caleb Joseph on the line momentarily to talk about his experience catching bullpen sessions for a new Blue Jay pitcher, Yusei Kikuchi. Ask him a little bit about, hey, guess what? The Toronto Blue Jays have some very interesting back catching prospects, but maybe too many to where they could be on the move or they could be trying out new positions, including, you know, some thought that Gabby Moreno could see reps at third base. Of course, that position could be blocked by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So who knows? Our own Hazel May tweeting out a video from Dunedin just now this morning of Vlad doing the old take the hoppers on your knees to work on the hands and the reaction time stuff. I don't know. This is it's one of those funny things where were there not Freddie Freeman rumors, we'd be like, oh yeah, this is just a regular occurrence. This is just what you do to stay good defensively. But now there's obviously we're taking it as smoke.
Blake, you said you had a spin for everything, no matter how we go with things or how free agency plays out with the Blue Jays.
I do.
If the Jays don't trade for Ramirez at third or trade for Chapman at third, don't end up getting an actual bona fide third baseman, my spin is going to be they don't want to block Moreno. That's going to be the
perfect
spin. Is that Moreno's only a year away. He might even join this year. They see him as a third baseman. They're going to move him there. He's going to be a superstar. He's going to be younger Vlad. Do you like younger Vlad? That's who he is. With defense, that's what I'm going to spin that as.
All right, so one catcher potentially moving to third. One catcher who moved to a different title in an organization, the Vibes coordinator, former Blue Jays catcher, member of the Seattle Mariners organization last year, Caleb Joseph. Good morning, man. How are you?
Good morning. You guys doing all right?
Doing great, man. Very, very happy that...
Depends.
Uh-oh.
Well, depends. Like, I don't know, man. Do you have a Twitter account? You follow social media or MLB insiders right now? Toronto's basically at the helm of every trade rumor there is. People that love baseball in the city are the pins and needles because it's like, could end up with Freddie Freeman or he could end up a New York Yankee today. It's like, pretty big swing. Pretty big swing of having Freddie Freeman versus having him go to a rival. So, like, yeah, it depends.
Oh, yeah, I understand. At least they're connected to him, right? It could be worse. Could be just Yankees being talked to only, and Toronto might not be in there.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited. That's why I'm saying it's good. I'm looking out the window. It's snowing here in Toronto, and I feel like I'm in Dunedin. I'm ready to go. The lockout being lifted has been a big morale boost over here. Caleb, I'm sure you're excited as well. One piece of shopping the Jays already have done is the signing of Yusei Kikuchi, who spent the last couple of years with the Seattle Mariners. You were his bullpen catcher a little bit last year. Before we get into some specifics, what can you tell us about Kikuchi out of the gate here? What are we expecting from him?
Kikuchi, he's a great guy. He was impressive over there. I had seen him a couple of years ago sign, didn't know much about him, and because he was over there on the kind of the west side up there, Pacific Northwest. You don't really see much about that Seattle team. And then I went over there, and, man, I had no idea that he was 95, 97, 98 from the left side. I thought he was 92, 93, just kind of your typical left-handed guy. I thought he was kind of a location guy that came over, and, boy, I was wrong. He's a power left-handed pitcher. He's got a really nice cutter. He's got a split finger fastball that I personally wish he threw more. And he can dump in a kind of a curve slash slider. It's kind of a hybrid of both of those. Yeah, power left-handed arm reminds me of Robbie Ray. It's sort of similar type presentation as Robbie Ray. Just has that cutter, but in terms of the high velocity left-handed power arm, it's going to be sort of similar to that.
Well, you see why the Blue Jays like him then, and maybe why they can get they think they can get a little more out of him. Last year, Yusei did struggle a little bit with hard contact in terms of home runs, hard hit rate, things like that. But he also managed to up the strikeout rate, cut the walks, miss a few more bats. What kind of growth did you see from him? I know his numbers tailed off in the second half. But throughout the year, where did you see that growth in terms of fewer balls in play and fewer free guys on base?
To be honest with you, I think a lot of it had to do with his split finger usage. He was pretty low on that when I got there in May. And as the year continued to progress and get deeper and deeper and deeper, he started using that pitch more, and it was devastating to right-handed hitters. The opposition, they were continually stacking him against right-handed hitters, or stacking right-handed hitters against him, and he needed something that would move away from him. Being left-handed, obviously he's got that cutter. He was really, really heavily dependent on that cutter. And from a left-handed hitter, obviously that's running in. Now, if you can get a guy that really has kind of a longer out-over swing, yeah, you're going to get some weak contact, some jam jobs. But that cutter is at 89, 90, 91. And when you have 98 mile-an-hour fastballs in the tank, I personally loved him throwing 98 inside and then split-finger fastball moving down and away, moving away from him. So when he just kind of stuck to the fastball cutter, you're talking about two pitches that are pretty much moving into the right-handed hitters the whole time. They never have to really, truly respect anything outside. And so I think he was starting to open up that part of the zone and figure out, man, I can play that fastball in, split away, and that's a pretty good combo against right-handers.
For sure, and he got almost a 40% whiff rate when he threw that against right-handers. So they obviously, you know, not a lot of great contact there. They still had some luck with the cutter, but it's a nice, you know, normally when a guy comes in, sometimes we look, hey, are the Jays going to have this guy drop a pitch to focus on the couple pitches he does really well and sequencing them better or getting ahead in the count better? And I think you just make a great case for him, at least against righties, using that four-pitch mix instead, maybe even scaling back the cutter just based on kind of the numbers there. Obviously, he's had a lot of success against lefties. What is it that makes him so difficult for a guy from the left-handed side of the plate, other than just, you know, he throws gas from the left side?
That's a great question, because most of those left-handers that throw gas are usually really tough on lefties.
Yeah.
I think it's the slider, really. It's the slider. I mean, they and something about his, you know, the windup, the traditional kind of Japanese pausing, the slow lift of the leg, kind of the heel kick, and all of the different timing mechanisms that they create to mess up the hitter's timing. A lot of that stuff is really tough. And I think, though, it's the slider. I think it's the slider. And when you can get over a 95 to 98 mile an hour fastball from the left side, and then you make them respect that pitch, you can dump in a slider pretty much at any time, and it's devastating. It's just absolutely devastating. And he's got the hard cutter that he can throw to left-handers to get ahead. But to be really honest with you, I would really ditch the cutter usage. I think it's a pitch that gives the hitter too much to get back into the timing aspect of it. When you've got 98 miles an hour and then you can go way under that into the low 80s with these multiple breaking pitches, I think that medium speed in the zone pitch is something that really has plagued him. And again, I would stick with four seam fastball, slider, split, have at it, go get it. But he is tough on those lefties, and I think a lot of the left-handed issues come with the slider.
We're talking to former big leaguer Caleb Joseph, was with the Blue Jays a couple of years ago. So before you came on, we were talking about the Jays' top prospect, Gabriel Moreno. I'm not going to ask you specifics about him. I don't even know if you know of his existence. But it raises this question that comes up oftentimes with catchers, which is, hey, do you move this guy off the position? Do you keep him as a catcher? Because even just the other day, we were discussing how there seems to be this pursuit of always trying to find the next Joe Mauer or Buster Posey, right? The catcher who not only is a plus defender, but a guy who can hit too. And the catcher position misses more than anything else. Top-end prospects miss more than anything else. What do you see as the major impediment why this ends up happening more times than not? And, like, how do you prioritize a young guy coming up that can play that position, but where organizations start to say, yeah, but we could bring you in a little bit more safely at a different one?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, right? You get this answered, and you have a franchise player. You have a franchise catcher that could play 5, 10, 15 years for the organization. Look, there, you know, at any given time, you're going to have 60 catchers in the big leagues, right? Let's just say 30 starters. So how many of those guys can actually really do both? 5, 6, maybe? And all those guys make $100 million. It is incredibly tough to do. I just don't think people quite understand the mental and physical toll that catching takes on the body. So I think if you have a pretty decent bat, I think that really nice to try and push you and keep you going. If you have an elite bat, over time and over years, you can just see how that catching position just somehow finds a way to hit chinks in the armor of that elite bat. And the guys that don't fall off, they're potential Hall of Famers. You know, your Buster Posey types. I mean, you look at Salvador Perez that comes in and he had kind of ridden the wave of being above average hitter, but finds a way to hit, what, like 50 homers last year or something. So those guys are incredibly elite. I think if reality is, if you can hit, they'll find a place for you. And apparently this guy smashes, and apparently he's really good behind the plate. So yeah, I don't think there's really any magical sauce or magic move that you make. A lot of it too really has to, in my opinion, depends on what the player wants to do. If you can tell the player really wants to catch, I'd let him go just because it's such a demanding and tough position. But if you can hit, they'll find a place for you. And if that means moving you to left field or first base or whatever, no problem. But like you said, those guys that can do it, they're $100 million players at least and potential for Hall of Fame. So I'd love to keep them back there as long as possible. You can always move them later, right?
Yeah, for sure. And Caleb, you mentioned obviously there's a physical and mental toll. And the physical toll we can at least picture, right? You're crouching back there. You're taking, you're dropping down to block balls. You're on your knees most of the game. But the mental aspect of it is really interesting. And I'd love your take on, with a young prospect, whether that's Moreno or any of the Jays have four young catchers on their 40-man roster, or any prospect in general, what is it you're looking for in terms of measuring a catcher's growth behind the plate? Obviously, we can see the running game, we can see framing, we can see athleticism back there. But in terms of calling a game and just being solid back there for your pitchers, is there anything you can eyeball, or is it just kind of a feel thing and you know it when a guy's figuring it out?
It's a little bit of both. Well, how is that possible? No, it really is. Calling a Major League Baseball game is one of the most difficult things ever, and especially in the American League East. All right, so was moved around quite a bit the last 3 or 4 years and experienced a couple of different divisions, and trust me, the American League East is still just the beast, and it is such a difficult division. The mental aspect of it is each and every night you're making 150 to 200 decisions that could win or lose the game at any point. You have no idea which pitch call. You have no idea what swing. You have no idea what hit is going to win or lose the game until it's over. And you're trying to do as much preparation as you can. Now, some people say, well, we've got all these scouting reports provided with analytics. That's true. And there's never been more information in the game. There's never been a better study guide to take the test, but that is what it is. It's a study guide. And if you stick solely to that wristband, you're going to become predictable. You're going to become, you're going to lose that instinctual calling of the game in the gut. And so what you're looking for, a young prospect that can really truly help a pitcher get out of jams, understand that pitcher and what it takes for him to get back into counts, being able to call pitches to get him back on track. Do you know that four seam down and away or
or that changeup to the lefty actually gets him and gets him back into the arm position he needs so he can now execute that fastball up and in. These are the type of things that I look for, because anybody can slap on the quarterback wristband and call to the algorithms. Well, that just becomes incredibly predictable, and it doesn't necessarily get your pitcher in a position where he goes, instead of going five and dive, you might be able to pull five or six out of him. And you're playing a huge part in this, and that's just one pitcher for one game. You might have four of those, and then going back after the game and being able to sit down and talk with the three or four or five or however many pitchers you had that night and discussing their outings with them. And you're doing this every single night. So I know I'm getting long-winded here, but I'm incredibly passionate about this because that's the job description. You know, that is what Danny Jansen's really good at. He's really good at taking that time and doing this type of stuff with all those pitchers. And people wonder, oh, he's, you know, kind of a roller coaster on offense. Well, he's spending so much time doing the best he can to get all these pitchers in those positions that, quite honestly, I think that's what the position first and foremost means. And then if you rake, excellent.
Caleb, just quickly before we let you go, what was the last song you learned on the drums?
I was actually trying to figure out Subdivisions by Rush. There's some real intricate moves in that song that I haven't quite mastered yet, but I'm sticking with it. Subdivisions, Rush.
Spoken like a man who spent some time in the Toronto Blue Jays organization, of course, given the nod to Rush there. Caleb Joseph, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
You got it. No problem.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert. That was Caleb Joseph before the break there, former Blue Jays catcher. Some great insight on not only Yusei Kikuchi, but what players like Alejandro Kirk and Gabriel Moreno may be going through here in spring training as they try to learn the mental side of back catching, as well as, you know, how that toll, the mental toll there, in addition to the physical toll, maybe nudges you toward, hey, maybe this guy has to move off the position, not only for physical reasons, but because to be an elite hitter, there's a lot of mental bandwidth that requires. And there's also a lot of mental bandwidth that being a good game caller and stopper requires as well.
Well, it's funny whenever someone simplifies and gives you a perspective. Just, he says something like, yeah, that's a guy making 250 decisions on the game every single night. And you go, right. You know,
yeah.
We just talked
and
about
then he's all, and then he's also got to go up and figure out what the other team's trying to do so he can hit.
Of course. And you got to take the equipment on and off. That's a consideration as well. it's just funny hearing someone put it plainly like that. And you go, right. Sometimes there are very obvious things. You know what else is an obvious thing? Is if you can go to a Leafs game for free, you probably want to do that. You get to go see Carlgren or Mrazek or whoever, somebody good like that. Hey, Leaf fans, we're giving away a pair of tickets to the March 17th game against Carolina, the St. Patrick's Day game. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show, which I ask you to do basically every day anyways. Subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and listen for the code word that will be played in our own podcast. Blake wrote, he did all these reads. Don't make him waste his time. He did all these sneaky reads that they drop in. There's little code
I mean, you can
words.
Make me waste my time because that just means I'll take the tickets. The tickets will go unclaimed.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually
I'll
how
be
it
going
works.
To the Leaf game.
That's how it works. Blake gets the tickets. Once you've located today's code word, text it to 590-590, and you'll be entered for a chance to win. The winner will be selected tomorrow. So tomorrow you got a chance to get tickets for Thursday's game against the Carolina Hurricanes. See Freddie Anderson return, Freddie versus Carlgren, the matchup that we've all been waiting for. Quickly, before we get to Rick Tocchet, a couple quick things on the Blue Jays. One, it was a rumor roundup, right? We're all just hitting refresh on the old Twitter app, right? All day long?
That's where we're at.
Right.
Multiple sports. We got hockey and baseball in the transaction windows.
We do have both, and there's a bunch of stuff that we'll bring up with Rick, and we'll do more NHL trade rumors tomorrow. I thought Elliot Friedman said a lot of stuff with Merrick this week on 32 Thoughts and on the Jeff Merrick Show. But John Heyman, 20 minutes ago, saying the Yankees continue to talk to Anthony Rizzo under the continuing belief top choice Freddie Freeman is still not a likelihood. Ooh,
I love that.
Not a likelihood for you Yankees, you little small timers. Don't know how to come up and grab the big dog free agents like George Springer, like Freddie Freeman. Can't get in the room, put all your money into the Garrett Cole basket. Now you got nothing left for old bats, old Freddie Freeman. Enjoy all those strikeouts from that loser Stanton. Although he kind of ended our season. But either way. That's the way it is. Please, Freddie Freeman.
Here's
come
the
to
thing:
Toronto.
Having infinite huge guys with no defensive position is bad for the Yankees, but it would be good for the Blue Jays.
It would be great.
Way better if the Blue Jays.
Great for the Blue Jays. Would be a huge fan of it for the Blue Jays. So yeah, we continue to watch this thing. I don't know. I used to do this thing on the show called Reflections. And it was kind of looking back, because we're going to talk to Tockett in a second. We're going to call him in a few minutes here. But I wanted to fit in a last baseball thought with you guys before we go. Did today change at all the way that you felt so far? It's early in the morning, right? This stuff is probably going to heat up throughout the day. But has anything changed, whether it's something that you want through our dream board exercise, whether it was talking to Blair, whether it was, looking at how the free agent market seems to be shaping up, a report like that about Freddie Freeman, getting your optimism higher, lower, whatever. Blake, anything shift today? Are you in the exact same spot? Because you're pretty rational, so it's hard for me to envision you did.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same spot. And honestly, we've had such a long offseason to think about this stuff that I don't see anything materially changing for me. Like, we know who these players are. We know what their fit would look like. I think just more and more, hey, something is going to happen and something should happen, because this team's got a window here and there's so much excitement and optimism, but just there are gaps to fill. And honestly, maybe the biggest thing is I'm encouraged by every Jays person we bring on or national person talking about, there's no talk of like, hey, the Jays are out of budget and they're out of the market on this guy because, you know, their payroll's up to 150 or whatever. They're in the mix on a lot of these guys still after they've done some pretty significant off-season work already. So that's encouraging from a kind of a fandom perspective as well.
For me, it's the options, right? You know, it's not like there's a couple free agents on the board that 10, 12, 15 teams are chasing. Yeah, there's some big names. Freddie Freeman has been linked to the Yankees, Red Sox, and Blue Jays since we've, you know, come on and started talking about it here. But if they do fail, and I don't want to put this into your dream world, dream board world, JD, but if they do fail on Freddie Freeman, there are options. And this team is set, it seems, determined to improve itself. And because there are so many options on that dream board, and because there is that ambition from the Blue Jays and the Blue Jays front office, they're going to end up making move here, and their team is going to be better for it. And that's just more and more reason to get excited about what's ahead.
Yeah, the more I think about and watch sports, the more just so much of it comes down to ownership, and so much of it just comes down to the purse and all these different things. And this is an awkward comment to make as someone who is this radio station is owned by Rogers Sports and Communications, but it really does seem like ownership is invested right now, that there's window of spending money. If you're talking about adding Freddie Freeman and Kyle Schwarber and people aren't dismissing it, and you're already what Blake, they're like supposed to be 15, 20 million up against the budget, and then
that was
went out
before
and got Kikuchi.
Yeah,
that's what I mean, is like they already added Kikuchi to that. You should be looking at a budget that's around $8 to $10 million, I'm just guessing. And guess what I can tell you with a certainty? Freddie Freeman is going to cost more than $8 million a year.
Yeah, so the only thing is if they have a Grichik thing lined up that they know they can get off of that money if other things fall into place, potentially. But yeah, it does look like they're going to spend beyond what we anticipated heading into the lockout.
Our next guest can relate, coming from Arizona, where they just spend so much money on the hockey team. Rick Tockett, former NHL forward, head coach, Stanley Cup champion, and current NHL analyst on TNT. How are we doing, Rick?
How are you? First of all, I want to apologize about yesterday. If I was a player or a coach, I'd be suspended today. Probably, I'd be out of the lineup today. So
yeah, well, you're back in, okay? Here's the thing about star players, okay. Rick, and you know this as well as anybody, is it's different rules, yeah. You know? It's different rules for those of you guys. It's just like you'd have been suspended if you were some fourth liner, for sure, but you're not. You're a headliner. You're on the TNT panel. We're bringing you back on. You knew that was going to happen.
You know what, though? Like, I think, so, you know, listen, there's different rules for stars in certain respects, but I think for the most part, like, if a guy is late, fourth liner or star, you try to keep the same standard. I know, you know, people roll their eyes, but it's true. Like, I've been in situations where even a star guy will say, yeah, like, I screwed up. So, you know, if you're late, usually guys, you're not going to miss a game for that. You probably get a fine and stuff, but it happens a couple times.
You can send us a fine. You can send us money for a fine, actually. That's good. You just send a check, Fan Morning Show. Our producer will get on the line with you after this is done. He'll tell you where to send the money. That's actually how that's how we approach them here, is not suspensions. Yeah. We deal out punishments through fines. So, speaking of which, stars and being equal and fines and suspensions. Did the NHL get it right with Austin Matthews? Two games for the cross check to the face.
Great segue. Yeah, I think they did. I thought it was one game. I mean, I definitely we talked about it after the game. Some, you know, a couple guys were saying, well, just maybe a fine. Definitely, it's got to be at least a game. You know, two. Yeah, because of his record, I think one would have been sufficient. Two is, you know, pretty hefty. But yeah, anything to the neck and, you know, there was a bit of force there, obviously, you know, it was, you know, he kind of really went down on him pretty hard. So I think me personally won, but definitely suspendable play.
Yeah, that's the way we thought it was, too, that it was going to be one. I will admit, though, that when it was two, I wasn't overly shocked. I didn't clutch the pearls over it because, yeah, it was still a stick to the neck, to the face. He was pretty planted. He's a big guy. It didn't look great. But I do wonder, just like internally, for someone like you, coach, player, now analyst, how it is watching the player safety department operate. Because I was talking earlier, like, if this job was so easy, someone would have figured it out by now. They've had all these different players go through the role, all these different people go through the role, and seemingly the NHL just can't get it right. And do you think this is the nature of the sport that makes it so difficult? Could they be doing a better job? Is there something that you identify and say, you know what, we would have more consistency, or we would have better adjudication if it was for something? Like, what is it that seems to have such a massive disconnect between the way that the fans react to this and the way that this department continues to dole out justice?
Yeah, this is the $1 million. This is a great question because I got to tell you, it's a tough job. We all know it. I think you said it originally, the nature of the sport, it is hard to police this in a, like, perfect sense. Listen, when I was coaching, we'd have assistant coaches. We'd be around with the general manager. We'd look at certain plays and we go, what do you think here? We try to be our own department of player safety. And you'd have a guy beside me, you know, a veteran guy like Johnny McClain, who was one of my assistant coaches. He'd say, oh, it's two games. Then you'd have the other assistant coach, oh, I think it's five games. So I can understand the discrepancy and the arguments they have in there. I think everybody says the same thing. Just be consistent. You know, like, it's really hard. Like, you know, what's to the head? What's, you know, when things are to the head, to me, there's things that you just know that the guy didn't mean to do it. I mean, he went to hit with the shoulder. The guy was low and hit him in the head. I mean, that's a standard where, to me, it's like, obviously, it's hard for me to suspend that. But if they're going to say everything to the head, that's where, to me, I have a tough time as a coach or a player. Like, you know what's blatant, what's not. I think I know what's blatant or not, the temperature of the game, you know what's going on, the score of the game. But it's a hard job. I mean, I've had arguments with George Parros before with some of our players, like, where, you know, I thought one guy was, you got three games, I thought you should have got nothing, but that's just the way it is. You're biased, and then the next day some other player do the same thing, and, you know, he gets nothing. So I think that's what we all complain about.
I just want to open the floor on this Leafs team with you, yeah. Rick, because, you know, yeah. They're on pace for the best season, at least in terms of point total, in the franchise's history. And yet at the same time, you know, the sky is falling. You know, there are all these issues, and it seems like they don't have what they need in order to have any success in the postseason, which is, of course, is something that they haven't experienced in quite a few years right now. You covered the Heritage Classic over the weekend. You've had an eye on this team, obviously, all season with your work at TNT. What do you make of the weirdness of the situation this team is in, and what might be ahead for them?
Yeah, first of all, from just being an analyst now and watching games, not being biased by any team and just being not a coach anymore and obviously not a player, they're a fun team to watch. The problem I think everybody gets bent out of shape is the way they're winning, the way they've won this year. Like at the beginning of the year, I really kind of thought I liked the way they were playing. I thought they played stingy in their own end. Now they're when they win games, it's like a 6-3. They outscore teams. Matthews has to get his goals. Nylander, hopefully Tavares gets his goal. Where can they just win a game where they just play a really smart, diligent, I don't want to say so much tough hockey, but a tough defensive game where guys are doubling up quick. They're coming up with loose pucks and they're locking a game down 2-0. I think that's what people are looking for. Obviously, they're having goaltending issues the last month or 6 weeks. And, the goal, obviously, by Hinostroza was a backbreaker. Toronto, that shot from the corner. Like, those things happens once in a while on good goalies, but you can't happen, frequently. And I think that's happened last week. And I think that's why people are getting frustrated. Because, listen, as a player, you got to chase the game. You let those bad goals in. You're playing it. I thought the Leafs played great the first 10 minutes. The Buffalo's a scrappy team, and the ice was crappy. And I said that before the game. When the ice is, snowy, the advantage, the advantage is not to the more talented team. It just kind of evens out. Now you're looking at who's going to let the bad goal in, and unfortunately, it was Toronto.
Yeah, the Leafs are looking at playing a goalie tonight that has a sub-900 save percentage in the AHL. Like, it's dire straits right now. No Jack Campbell, and Mrazek is just letting in goals where he either doesn't have his post or he's, way out of his net. He's swimming. He's just seemingly lost. And, boy, even if you bring back Jack Campbell, he's basically been, well below average 5-on-5 since January 1st, since anywhere even around the All-Star game. You as a coach, you as a player, just a skater, someone, how do you approach this? Like, how do you approach trying to kind of pick up your goalie mentally? How does it wear on your group from a day-to-day standpoint? Like, it really does feel as though the Leafs need to make a net here, just not only to reinvigorate the position, but their just team in general.
Yeah, there's two things for me. First of all, leadership's got to, they got to hunker down and say, hey, listen, we know we're having a little issue with the goaltending, but we got to do our jobs. You can't let that excuse filter in your room. You can't, you're in the bus and a couple of guys, we lost the game to the goalie. Like, you can't keep saying that because it affects your game. All of a sudden, you're going to make excuses if you have a bad game. So that's number one. Number two, for me, Mrazek, and you've said it, he is all his mechanics. He's all over. Like, he's out of the net on making a save. He has to take 5-6 days. Me personally, work with a goalie coach and get his mechanics back because they're going to need him. They got to get his mind straight. There's some, I've been watching him the last month, and even when he makes a save, he's out of the net. And I'm not a fan of goalies that are all in. Like, it's the two pad stack or those type of guys. You got to be a quiet goalie. You got to let the thing hit you, and you let your system also help your goalie. So if the Leafs are going to play a tight system, hey, Let's just give let them give them the dot out. Let's not give them. We'll give them the grade B shots, but you can't give grade A shots right now because he's struggling. So can they do something differently? So really, maybe is there the, there's some times where, hey man, I want to make an offensive rush. We might have them. I'm gonna play the safe route for now. Hopefully, get Mrazek some time to get his game going the first half of the games. Don't give him some high level shots. I don't know. I'm just trying to search when you have. Yeah. When you have that kind of weakness in your game and you're trying to get the guy back, is there other ways you can do to try to, help this guy along? That's really what I think.
Well, Rick, you know what, though? It's so interesting hearing you go through this exercise on the show because you've been a coach. And that's why someone texted into our show earlier and was like, why isn't Sheldon Keefe wearing more of the blame right now? And I go, what do you want him to do? Like, what do you want him – what do you want Sheldon – you want him to strap on the pads? Like, you just heard an NHL head coach go on the air right now and work through the process of the things you're trying to figure out. And it's communicate to your team like, hey, maybe we're trying to be a little bit more tight defensively. Okay, but that's not exactly the way the Leafs are designed. They're not exactly the tight defensive team full of guys that are just locked down defenders all over the ice. Okay, so then what else is supposed to do? You're asking your star players to add a burden of don't be thinking about your offense as much, be thinking about a team. All right, maybe you can convince yourself that's a little bit more playoff hockey, but it's just, this just seems like such a tough spot for the team that I also wonder if you're going to make a trade right now ahead of the deadline, right? Because I don't know, personally, I don't think you have time to figure out Mrazek. To me, this is a situation where you're actually sending him down to the AHL. You're considering buying out the contract because I think they're going to need someone else other than Jack Campbell here that maybe is somewhat reliable. But the pressure of being a goaltender right now that has to step into this situation where both guys have been struggling for a long time, where the city just chased Freddie Anderson out of town, a guy who's been arguably the second best goalie in the NHL this year by the numbers. If anything, he's been top five. You can't put him lower than that. It just has to be immensely difficult for goalies on the outside to look at it as, hey, your team's all in. Your team doesn't play great defense, and you've had now multiple goaltenders that haven't worked out here recently. how do you even welcome a guy like that in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, great points by you. Like all, you know, fan bases, you know, like when you're losing or you don't like the way things are, you know, you're going to blame the coach. I'm kind of on your page. I don't know how you can blame Sheldon Keefe. Like, I don't know what's going on in the dressing room. You know, maybe. You know, I don't know, has he tried to change things? Like, I don't know that, but for that game, like, I don't think it was as bad as everybody says other than the fact that the goalie let two bad goals in. So it's really hard for me to, like, really blame the coach. So I'm with you. The problem is, there's a good problem. I don't really give a crap where the Leafs finish. They just got to be playing their best hockey in April. Like, that's to me, who cares where they finish? I think everybody's worried about, wins. It's to me how the team's playing. They're going to get in the playoffs. Who cares? Like, I know every single week they're going to play this team. I don't think you have to worry about that because it doesn't matter. If you're not playing good hockey, it doesn't matter anyways who you play. So how do you sort that out? Obviously, there's pressure on Dubas. He's got to try to, you know, everybody wants a goalie. You know, can you... You know, is there a possibility to get a Flower? I mean, a Flurry. I mean, what would that do to the Toronto area and the fan base? I mean, it would be unbelievable. How do you get them? Is it impossible to get them? Is there other guys that, if you go get, maybe it's not a totally number one grade A one goalie, but he's a pretty good goalie where guys are like, hey man, the team's trying to win. I don't know. It's a hard thing for Dubas because he's dealing from weakness now because everybody knows the Leafs are having goaltending problems. I just think right now, I would tell my team, I don't care about wins and losses. I really don't. And people probably roll their eyes. It's, we got to get our game playing so we hit the playoffs. Like, you know, you've seen eight seeds go all the way and win Stanley Cup. So to me, it's just who's playing the best hockey. And that's how they have to get their mentality right now. How do we get the best hockey out of this team? And the wins and losses will come because of that.
Is that difficult for, like, a superstar to reconcile with? Like you mentioned, wins and losses doesn't matter. We have to get right. But a player like Austin Matthews, and we mentioned the suspension, sort of boiling over from a frustration level. And really, it's so much has been on him this year. And it's hard to say to him, like, hey, wins and losses, it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like a player wouldn't see it the right way. And we're kind of seeing that frustration from him. And you have so much experience with superstars, Rick. You know, back in your time with Pittsburgh with Sidney Crosby, a superstar that has at times probably carried the load almost exclusively. Like, what does that do to a superstar player when it seems like they're dealing with so much themselves and so much of the burden just on their back?
Yeah, great point. I mean, paraphrase, I don't mean like who cares wins loss. I'm just saying the way the team plays. And then the wins and losses take care of themselves. But for me, like a guy like – it's a perfect example for Austin Matthews. Like, he's an unbelievable player, a great goal scorer. And Crosby, the same thing. The thing with Crosby would do, we would play – I remember going through Tampa in those playoff series in Washington where Sid might have not had a goal or assist, and we were up 2-1. But that last 10 minutes, he went straight up with Ovechkin and Backstrom line, or he'd go against Point and – or Kucherov and Stamkos, and shut those guys down, and we won the game 2-1. Never got an assist, never had a point, but we won, and it didn't matter. Like, the problem is when you don't score and get points, and you lose the game, and the team outplays it like Montreal did in the game 6 and 7, kind of. That's when you get the critics going, you know, can you win the big one? Can you do, you know, can you? I think Jonathan Toews, when he won the cup, didn't he go like 11 games without scoring a goal? I don't think people realize that. I'm not quite sure, but I didn't think he scored for a while, but he was playing great defense. And plus the team was winning. So that's really what it comes down to. Can you lock it down? You know, can you go heads up with another star player and shut him down? And hopefully you get your goals. But yeah, Austin Matthews, I mean, if he doesn't score, the Leafs have a tough time winning right now. I mean, it's really and you know, this guy scores almost every game. So I don't know if I answered your question. I just think winning hockey is just being able to have all facets of your game. I still think Sidney Crosby, he scored his 500th goal, 3 weeks ago. If he wanted to cheat the game, he could have 600 goals. I'm just telling you right now. But he doesn't because it's a 200-foot game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either of us think that Austin, any of us on the conversation, think Austin Matthews has to change anything. But it seems like, you know, when you're doing everything, we're talking Hart Trophy campaign, you're doing everything, and it seems to be slipping further and further away. It has to play into his mindset. I've been wondering something the last, I guess, a couple weeks, maybe a month, watching Sheldon Keefe deploy his defense core and going through all the options, kind of exhausting his options. And I'm wondering if he is sort of using a coaching tactic to send a message to his general manager in that, hey, I've laid out all the options. I've done everything I can possibly do with this defense core. I'm laying out the problems for you to see. Do you think there's anything to that? Is that something that you may have gone to in terms of a coaching tactic? Or am I just reading up too much into it and these guys are simpatico, it doesn't matter anyway?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that's why it's so important. The GM and the coach, they got to be dialed in together. And I, you know, just from the outside looking, I think those guys are, you know, really close and have a great communication. I've had some, you know, my dealings, some GMs where you're just not on the same page. Maybe that would happen. But you know, when the injuries are hitting you on the D core and you're trying to, you know, you're trying to put different combinations, you're trying to find a shutdown D that you can rely on last minute of games and you know, just against the other team's stars. And, you know, and you're injured and you got to throw like a guy that's usually a 5-6 or 6 defenseman, 7, and all of a sudden he's playing a top 4 role for long periods. It's hard. But I think that's where the team in general has to pick it up. And then if you don't, like I said, it keeps going to goaltend. Like we talked about, you know, you said about you're worried about Austin Matthews and, you know, he's doing all he can and you know, if things don't go well, the body language and stuff. But look at Connor McDavid, like, what, 2 months ago, like, when, you know, they couldn't get a save, they were losing all those games. Like, you could tell his energy level was all-time low. Now he's starting to pick it up again because Kostin's playing well. Their team's playing a structured game. You know, they're not getting as many chances they did 2 months ago, and they're starting to win some games. So, you know, can Toronto somehow get that little bit of a playbook, maybe play a little bit better, more structured? I don't know. And I'm not blaming Sheldon Keefe because I think he's a really structured coach. I think when you just get some, you know, the goaltending's weak, you start to cheat a little bit as you think you have to outscore teams.
Rick Tocchet, former NHL head coach, player, Stanley Cup champion, current NHL analyst on TNT, and hopefully not Welcher because you owe us money for the fine. Like I said, our producer will be on the line with you a sec. The number is the number, Rick. You didn't hear it wrong. It's a big number, but it's a fair number. Thanks for making time for us today, pal. This was always great.
I will, before I leave, I swear, and I've been involved in the NHL as a coach or player 30 years, I've never been late or never missed a function ever. So this is the first one, so go easy on me on the fine.
I won't. Have a great day. See you, Rick. This is Rick Tocchet. Great stuff. NHL on TNT. So this just keeps bringing me back to the same thing over and over and over again. It just seems like the dams have burst with the Leafs. And I know that sounds overly negative and people think, oh, that's media and JD, you're overly reaction and blah, blah, blah. You always do this, JD. You're so negative. I'm actually not. I'm in a pretty good spot with it. I really feel like you go out, you get a goalie who can be behind Jack, but you don't overpay for it. You go into the postseason, you rely on Jack, and you see whether or not your star players develop the killer instinct. Whether or not Austin Matthews, William Nylander, John Tavares, Morgan Riley, and Mitch Marner can get it done on the big stage. Because there's just so many things to address right now. Forward depth, blue line depth, goaltending. Boy, it's a lot. It's a lot to put on Kyle Dubas with now 6 days to go to a trade deadline in a market where unrestricted free agent defensemen, who are arguably top four defensemen at this point in their careers, based on Josh Manson's numbers, are going for the price of a high-level prospect and a high-level pick. Seems like for an organization that doesn't have a lot of draft capital and has some prospects that they're really going to need fill out spaces around what is a capped-out team because they're unbelievably top-heavy, is in a damn tricky spot right now. And so this isn't negative saying that I don't think the Leafs should necessarily go out and do something splashy. I just don't think that it's there for them. And when I listen to the way that Rick talks about this team, guy's a lifer in the game. He's done every role there is. And did you just hear him talk about the Leafs goaltending and the stress that it's put on the team and trying to figure out what a solution is there? There's no... If that doesn't get figured out, everything else is irrelevant. Everything else they do is irrelevant if they don't get some saves. And we don't know if they're going to get some saves. And so if you don't know that you're going to get some saves, I'm not breaking the bank to go out and add things around goalies that might let everything in anyways. So if that's the case, get the heavy lifting done in the offseason. But I'm sorry, I'm not working under the gun with 6 days to go paying premium prices for a team that has such a massive question mark right now.
For me, I think the defenseman could be out there. I still believe that. But when I've been thinking more and more about the goaltending, right? More and more. And I'm kind of with you. I think they need help. I think Peter Mrazek has to go. I think they need help. But here's what it comes down to. If Kyle Dubas is 0-for-2 in his evaluation of goaltenders coming into this season, then he didn't have a chance anyway. So you can go out and get that splashy goaltender. Maybe he's out there. Maybe that fixes everything. But if you came into the season with two guys who were incapable of getting it done, then what chance did you have anyway? With the defense core, they have had some unexpected adversity. Jake Muzzin's out. Can you replace Jake Muzzin? Then maybe you have rounded out your defense core. But if you're 0-2 with goaltending coming into the season, then you never had a shot anyway.
Yep. By the way, speaking of shots, just going to say, I've been on the old Twitter machine, you know, just twittering around. Or this is like a little refresh every once in a while because I'm totally addicted to it while the Blue Jays free agency stuff is going on. And there's more buzz happening. The buzz is buzzing, all right? So you might be down on Leafs goaltending and down on Leafs trade deadline buzz, but you can be up on Blue Jays buzz. Started with the Freddie Freeman thing this morning from Heyman saying that the Yankees feel like they're out, basically, is what he said. That's what I'm reading into it. You're not trying to get Anthony Rizzo done and Freddie Freeman. That's actually that's definitely a no-no. All I'm seeing is Sid Sixero tweeting eyeball emojis. I'm seeing people connecting dudes that random saying that it's going to be a good day to be a Blue Jays fan. Just saying that the buzz is buzzing and the hopes are high. And I thought only Ailish was supposed to say this word, the vibes, but there's vibes. There's vibes out there. There's vibes that happening. I'm just saying. This is a thing. I got a feeling, and this feeling feels right.
A lot of buzz out there. You know, Big Bear loves his honey. So let's go. Bees, buzz. Let's go.
Ending
it would
on that,
be really nice
That's
to do a Freddie.
Show.
Yeah, Big Bear loves his honey. It's been the Fan Morning Show. Leafs starts tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. It's been Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, the Fan Morning Show. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.